With Vince Farrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Our special guest, Dr. Jerry Punch, his appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Let's go to the phones where Randall is our next caller. Randall, you're on with Doc Punch.
Hey, Jimmy, and hey, Dr. Punch. Thank y'all for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Jimmy, I got a quick question for you.
Yes, sir.
Who did you pick in the SEC championship?
I picked Georgia, 20-17.
Okay, but you own your pick, right?
Yes.
You're a good man. Dr. Punch?
Yes, sir.
How do you feel about the Tennessee-Purdue game? Because, quite frankly, I'm a little worried about Purdue. So I'll hang up and listen to you guys off the air. And thank y'all so much for taking my call.
Okay, thanks, Randall.
Thank you, Randall. Well, you know, Purdue's one of those teams that can be very dangerous. And, you know, I like the coaching staff. I like the wide-open offense. And they're hot and cold. They can play, they can show up and not even be able to not be very effective, or they can show up and be hitting on all cylinders. They're one of those teams that was very inconsistent this year, and I think if you ask Jeff Brohm, he would tell you the same thing. We had all these weapons, and sometimes we just misfired everywhere. So. You know, at times they looked like Tennessee playing Pittsburgh early in the year, you know, where they had people open and couldn't hit them and just missed opportunity after opportunity to score. Other times it looked like Tennessee playing Vandy, and where they just continued to be able to be effective or, you know, just moving the ball quickly. I think this could be a good ball game. I think they will have a little issue with Tennessee's tempo in the offense, and I think Tennessee's secondary will be tested.
Doc, I do want to ask you about this. In the Big 12 championship, Baylor jumps out to a big lead. Oklahoma comes storming back. At the very end of the game, Oklahoma drove the length of the field. They got inside the 5-yard line, failed on fourth down. What were your thoughts on the Cowboys' comeback and their fourth down attempt?
Well, it's one of those things I think that coaches will tell you, if you get it first and goal in the two and you got four plays to win a conference title, and you don't get in the end zone, you don't deserve to win it. And I think, kudos to the Oklahoma State coaching staff and Mike Gundy for just saying, come off, we tried and didn't get there. I do want to say this, though. One of the special parts of that game, if you saw that final play where Desmond Jackson, the running back for Oklahoma State, is trying to get to the corner, and he misses by like 3 inches getting to the pylon, the young man who made the tackle, his name was Jaron McVay. Jaron McVay grew up 30 minutes from the campus in Baylor. He was a two-star recruit, if that, barely a two-star recruit out of high school. His only scholarship offer out of high school was at Texas Southern. But he loved Baylor so much, he decided to go there and walk on in 2016. He was a six-year senior hoping for a chance to play. Jaron McVay was the young man who made that championship-clinching tackle in the final seconds against Desmond Jackson. How about that for a young man who his entire life wanted to be a Baylor Bear, went there to walk on, waited his turn for 6 years, and made a play that gave Baylor a championship. And if young people out there listening and saying, I want to go play at Tennessee or wherever your favorite school is because I want to be a Vol, this kid wanted to be a Baylor Bear, and look what happened. Great story of perseverance for this young man, and look how it paid off. I mean, I love seeing his teammates jump around him. But you know what? Desmond Jackson tried to get there, but he was like 3 inches short.
Yeah, that was a heck of an ending to that game. All right, let's go back to the phones where our next caller is Jerry. Jerry, you're on with Doc Punch.
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you again.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Jimmy, you know, after Tennessee's last game, somebody called you, and he was really upset because he was wondering why Ole Miss could kind of turn things around real quick and Tennessee couldn't. But, you know, Tennessee had their state championships over the weekend, and just some little rundown that they had in the New Sentinel, it named 9 or 10 recruits that are committed. And those players that are in their state championships are committed to Duke, Boston College, Cincinnati, Vanderbilt, a football player and a baseball player, Alabama, that's a five-star quarterback, Texas A&M, Colorado State, a set of twins going to Kentucky, and a player going to Miami. Tennessee, not one. I don't know what you can make from that, but it just seems, and I know Tennessee, the way it's laid out, doesn't have that many players to begin with, and then when they do have good players, for some reason, it seems like they don't want to come to Tennessee. So, is anything you can make of that?
Yeah, I'll touch on some of that, and then I'll leave it for Vince or Doc. One of the things that hurt Tennessee was the transition from Jeremy Pruitt to the new coaching staff. It's tough for this new coaching staff to come in and build a relationship that quickly. The Wade twins that are going to Kentucky, Tennessee wanted one. The linebacker didn't want the other. Kentucky was willing to take them both. Tennessee wanted Ty Simpson. He elected Alabama. Kind of hard to argue with that one. I don't know every name that you're talking about, but I think it was hard for Tennessee to get in. Now, next year, if Tennessee misses out on all these players, I think you got a problem, but I'll also throw this askers out there. You still don't know what's going to happen with the NCAA, and don't think for a second other schools aren't using that against Tennessee, telling these recruits they're going to get a bowl ban 2 years, 3 years. They're going to have 12 scholarship reduction. They don't know. They're just planting a seed in these recruits' minds. Vince?
Yeah, I think that the transition is a part of it. It's the first year, had to make up so much ground, and all the NCAA that was there up against them. So it's going to take time to build those relationships. And talking to a bunch of high school coaches calling high school games this year, almost all of them said that this coaching staff has been in touch with them, even if they didn't have players. And that's the building of relationships, and that pays off down the road. Another factor is guys that aren't committed. Two wide receivers on that Powell championship team, Darius Redmond, Aiden Green, both of them have Tennessee offers. They're not committed yet, but they have offers from Tennessee. Doesn't mean that they're not going to go to Tennessee in future classes. They're both juniors. So that's where it could pay off for you down the road. And it, I just think it was let go and wasn't as much of a priority like it should be going in. And I think that's just going to take time to see those benefits. But obviously, it's not a great look now with just a couple of players from the state of Tennessee that are committed to Tennessee at the moment. Doc?
Yeah, I agree. And I agree with both what you said, but I agree with Jimmy's first statement. I think that you cannot measure how much, and I'm just going to be honest, how much Jeremy Pruitt hurt the University of Tennessee. He did not have a great relationship with high school coaches. He turned a lot of people off. I know one high school that we had some marquee five-star, Power Five players, and Dabo Sweeney was there on a Tuesday. Lincoln Riley was there on a Wednesday, both wearing their gear. And then Pruitt shows up on Thursday, does not have a single stitch of orange or UT logo or anything on. And one of the high school coaches said, if you're going to come here, you should be wearing the logos and sporting the colors and stuff. And he goes there and sort of walks in and out. I don't think he turned a lot of people off, and you just can't, and so the recruiting of some of these kids that were going elsewhere, took place over a couple of years, and I don't think Jeremy Pruitt did a very good job. I know he was known as a good recruiter in certain realms, but from what I heard from high school coaches around here that I know personally, he did not do himself any favors. He would go in, if anything, tell people they didn't think they were Tennessee material, which in reality reflects impacts other players on that squad that should have come to Tennessee. So and now, as far as moving forward, I think Rodney Garner and Willie Martinez and Golish, all these guys, Tim Banks, given what they've done, I think these guys are pretty good recruiters. I know Willie Martinez is a good recruiter, and I know that Rodney Garner can get it done. So I think Tennessee moving forward, down the road, are going to get some good players in here and are going to step it back up, especially in state.
And the thing that hurts Tennessee is that the state is tremendous. I've never seen there've been like 4, 5, 6 years in a row where this state is produced tremendous players. But you can't lose T. Higgins and Amari Rogers to Clemson, and Master Teague to Ohio State, mm-hmm. and all these other players to keep going somewhere else. Ty Simpson to Alabama. You can't keep doing that. At some point, you got to get the best players in your state, and if you do, then you're gonna end up having a lot better football program. But they have not been able to close the borders for a variety of reasons. So we'll see if they can if they get that corrected going forward with the staff. Let's go back to the phones where our next caller is Tom. Hello, Tom.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was kind of curious what's going on with Jacksonville, if you guys think Urban Meyer might be a one-and-done coach. I know he's had a lot of trouble with the what's going on with off the field and really with the productivity of Trevor Lawrence, and pretty much every decision he makes hasn't really been great. And I've been wondering if, because Tony Khan's been so busy with AEW, if Tony Khan takes a more active role in the team again, do you think Urban Meyer might stick around, or think he might be more likely to leave? I'll hang up and listen to what you guys have to say.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Doc, what do you think?
Well, Urban Meyer likes to be one of those guys where it's, I'm in charge. It's my show. It's my decisions. It's my, but it's in the NFL, it's a little bit different animal. And I think that, you know, the frustration factor, given the fact that he's had his issues at Florida, and again, some of the issues we had at Ohio State were stress and anxiety induced stress, and it created some medical problems for him. So I'm not so sure, you know, if things don't, if it doesn't turn, obviously what he's done so far, you know, an NFL team is like, I guess, like turning a battleship. It's going to take a little while, but he's got some really good talent with Trevor Lawrence there. And I'm not so sure, you know, what the sticking point is. And he might really need to find out quickly that he's not in charge when it comes to an NFL team. It isn't like a college team where you can make the call, because the people paying the bills and the payroll are the ones in charge. So I'm not so sure. And I thought about that too. Does he follow the Nick Saban model where you went to Miami and suddenly realized that it doesn't work there in the NFL, as we saw it with, you know, with Steve Spurrier and Saban and other really, really good college coaches, and then you bow out and go back somewhere else? I'm not so sure 1 year, though, is enough for him to make that decision.
And I'll take the ownership question from the caller real quick, because I love wrestling and watch AEW. Tony Khan, he runs AEW, which is the biggest competition for the WWE right now. He is so hands-on and has played so full with that, has an English Premier League team as well that the family owns. So I would be surprised. His dad, I think, does more in terms of the Jaguars day-to-day and ownership. So I don't think he's going to go suddenly start being more of a day-to-day presence for the Jaguars. So I don't know that that would be much of a presence. It'd be more like Doc was talking about, where's his health, where's his priority, what other options does he have, all that kind of thing.
Doc, by the way, as far as the college football playoff, do you see a rematch between Alabama and Georgia?
I do. I think the Cincinnati game is going to be closer than people predict. I just think that Alabama now, without, you know, with down one receiver, they're still much more talented and a much better coach. And I also think the deer in the headlights situation, Cincinnati got there, and that's all they got. And they're a great player. And I'm a big Ritter fan, you know, a Desmond Ritter fan. I think what he's done, but, you know, he's not seen a secondary. He's not seen a pass rush. He's not seen what they're going to see from Alabama. I think they will score, and barring any significant turnovers, it will be closer. I think it'll be less than 8 points. I think the Georgia thing. I think Michigan's a good matchup for Georgia. Because Michigan's a lineup, physical, slobber knock you. You know, snot bubbles out of you. You know, it's those guys up front that are going to make a difference. And after Georgia's defensive front seven got embarrassed a little bit in that SEC championship game, I think they're going to show up big time. I think that's going to be an interesting game. I think Georgia matches up so much better against Michigan than they would against an Ohio State with an effective passing game. So I see it being that Georgia and Alabama, although I think the Alabama-Cincinnati game is going to be closer than people realize.
All right, let's go back to the phones where David is our next caller. Hello, David.
Hey, Jimmy. Guys, thanks for taking my call, Doc. Doc, always like it when you're on. I love your comments. Very informed. I have two questions. I know we're switching gears about NASCAR, if that's okay. Did you happen to see or hear the comments that Darrell Waltrip made at the Hall of Fame induction ceremony at Nashville Speedway, where he's talking about NASCAR has to be careful because they're basically disenfranchised. They're turning some fans off because he feels like the management of NASCAR, the new management, is kind of just the old traditional fans are turning their back on them. Did you hear those comments?
I did not hear those. No, I did not.
Okay. You might want to look that up, because he was You know how Darryl is. He's never short on opinion. But he thinks where they're going with races and how they're doing it, and he thinks they're disenfranchising them. But the other question, NASCAR seems to be has been pretty consistent about, you know, what they did to Kyle Larson for racist statements, and they banned the rebel flags and things like that. Do you expect they're going to come down on Bubba Wallace for his controversial statements he made a couple weeks ago about the Rittenhouse trial? Do you think they're going to ignore that, or do you think they're going to be consistent with it?
I think they will ignore it. And if you want my honest opinion, I don't think anything will happen. You ask my honest opinion, I'll give you that. And I think Darryl, the point, and I didn't hear Darryl's comments, but I think the point he makes, the points he's trying to make there has some validity, because Darryl was around, I was around when the grandstands were full and there were waiting lists for people to buy tickets and television ratings were high. And I think they've got to be really careful with the sport. The Gen 7 car that's going to debut this year was going to be a move in the right direction, hopefully. They found some issues. They have some concerns. They canceled a couple of tests, or at least one test. They're going to a smaller track to try to get these resolved. They're really working around the clock to try to get this situation resolved. They've got there's some drivers in the garage area who are up in years that are well, have a big fan following that may not want to be a part of it much longer if this Gen 7 car doesn't pan out. So they've got some serious concerns with regard to how you hang on to your fan base and how do you take care of them, because the casual fans are just that. You cannot walk away. I really believe, though, I mean, the one thing that makes me feel good about NASCAR is Jim France. I've known Jim forever. He reminds me of his brother, Bill France. And Jim's been in charge and made some really good moves. Now, I think he probably, just like Bill France Jr. did, if he sees this Gen 7 cars and doing what he wants, he's going to jump in and say, fix it, just like Bill France Jr. did during the Busch Clash one year at Daytona when he didn't like what he saw on the racetrack, and he just called up his people in the garage area and said, you got two words from me, fix it or I will, kind of deal. And they made some rule changes, and they made some plate changes in the garage, and they had a great race the next day. So I think that's the thing that gives me a lot of hope, in that Jim France is still one of the guy calling the shots, and it's his baby. But boy, they have made some, they've had their issues, and I think Darryl's warning is valid. It really is.
Thank you, Doc. Thank you so much. Y'all have a good day.
Thanks. Appreciate it, David. Doc, as far as Formula One this next weekend, Lewis Hamilton versus Max Verstappen, whoever wins next week is going to take the title. Those guys don't like each other, do they?
No, they don't. And it's what do they say in these rivalries? It's good old fashioned hate. It's what it is, basically. The teams don't like each other. And if you know what's best for you, you stay out of the way. And Formula One leadership's got to make sure that the teammates don't get involved. And I hope they will do that, because the teammates can have an impact on who gets what, who wins what. And it can get ugly. And unfortunately, at those speeds, anything can happen, and Formula One is, I was just working on a speech I'm giving Wednesday for an International Motorsports Congress that involves some Formula One doctors. And I remember I was on a conference call once years ago in a medical capacity, and Ayrton Senna was on the call. It had Ayrton Senna and Emerson Fittipaldi, two guys. Senna was still driving actively. And I remember hearing how intelligent he was and how much he was concerned about safety in those cars. And then 2 weeks later, we lost him in a horrific accident. So it scares me a little bit about what can happen in a Formula One race, particularly when you have this kind of dislike for each other.
What's this week look like for you, Doc?
Well, as I said, I'm this conference that I'm a part of on Wednesday, I'm not sure I'm worthy. I think I'm pretty unworthy of being a keynote speaker. But it's a 3-day International Motorsports Congress, it's called, for safety, where there are IndyCar doctors, there are neurophysicists talking about where we're headed with the lithium batteries and some of the electric cars. There are Formula One physicians on talking about how they treated and what they had to do to intervene when some drivers got hurt there in the past. A lot of things that are breaking And I'm sort of going to turn back the clock and talk about some of the things I saw over the years that I can't believe people survived before we had the rules that we have today and fuel cells and seatbelt technologies and those kind of things. So that's a big part of the week. Obviously, you know, working here at UT, I love being what I'm doing, you know, with the clinical trials at AMR and, of course, getting a chance to watch some college basketball, which was wild over the weekend. And get ready for what may be a pretty fascinating bowl season.
Doc, we appreciate it. Always great to catch up with you. Look forward to visiting with you next week. Thanks, Doc.
We'll talk on Monday, guys. Thanks a lot.
And that is Dr. Jerry Punch's appearance brought to you by New Balance Knoxville. They are the fit specialists. What a great Christmas present for someone to go to New Balance Knoxville and check out what they have. Fantastic shoes at New Balance of Knoxville. Really pleased now to be joined by Gary Rankin, head coach of the Alcoa Tornadoes. They have just won their 7th consecutive state championship. Coach Rankin has got 17 state titles, 13 at Alcoa. Coach Rankin, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thank you.
I know it never gets old. You beat East Nashville 45-14. One thing I thought was interesting, you said that you didn't have any discipline problems all year. That's pretty unusual, isn't it, for a bunch of high school kids?
Really unusual. We had a couple kids late for a 6 o'clock practice one morning, but besides that, zero discipline problems on our football team, and probably one of the most enjoyable groups of kids that we've worked with in quite a few years. I mean, and it's not just Alcoa, but anytime you got 60, 70, 80 boys working in close quarters together all the time, you're going to have a few problems no matter what you do. But, boy, we just had a great group. They had a great year. I don't know if it was as talented as some of the groups we've had, but they sure played well as a team.
How was this year different from last year? And that last year you were having to deal with, a lot of people were having to deal with COVID. This year there were some that had to deal with it. But how was this year different from a year ago in regard to that?
Well, we had to deal with it three times. We had three games that was canceled. We probably had more than anybody in the state, but, you know, we just took it and went on. It was a lot easier than last year not having to deal with that. And, you know, we encouraged our kids to get, you know, our kids had a choice to get a COVID shot or wear a mask during the season. And we were about probably 50-50. Our kids wore their mask all the time if they chose not to get vaccinated. And we just wanted to protect them. And, you know, we really didn't lose anybody to COVID or any kind of COVID during the year. So that was great.
Did you find that those cancellations disrupted you at all? Or did you feel like that you could take that time and maybe make your team better?
Well, we did take that time and made our team better. And that's the way we looked at it, Jimmy. We had more practice time. We had physical practices. Of course, I hated it that the kids didn't get to play. You know, football's not like baseball or basketball. You play 30, 35 games, you know, win or lose, you go get your ice cream, get your sprinkles. It doesn't matter. In football, you get 10 paydays, and that's all you get. And the way we work our kids year round, you know, you don't want to cut them out of one of those paychecks. So that was the biggest thing that bothered me. Those kids didn't get to play in some of those games. But in the long run, I think it probably helped us and made us better because we really had some pretty physical practice during those days.
Coach, what were you most proud of about what your kids executed in that win in the state title game?
Well, we played hard, and we didn't play as sharp as we wanted to, possibly. But, you know, a lot of times coaches say that, but you got to take for granted that other team on the other side. They had some tremendous athletes. I thought they were a well-coached group. They handled themselves well, and, you know, they smacked us around at times. And, you know, our kids had to get over that smacking a little bit before we started getting things done. But, you know, I was proud of our kids. They were focused all week, had great attitude. And, you know, I've never seen any complacency in our football program. As good as we've been and what we've done, our kids have stayed hungry and our coaches have stayed hungry.
At the Rankin Palace, do you have any sort of memorabilia or a collection of the state championships, anything sort of organized for where you stockpile any of those stuff from the titles?
If you walked in my house, you would see zero football stuff. We had some visitors one night, and when they started to leave, and they said that they would thought I was a preacher before I was a coach. So we don't, that's just not me. I've got a few things up at school, and it's just to show people, but, you know, when people visit our school, but I sort of separate that from my house. There's not one piece of football. I've got a few rings in a drawer somewhere, but just not the way that we operate or my family operates. I'm not saying it's bad or good. Maybe I will one day when it's all over. My kids get on me sometime about putting some things up, but just not the way I roll right now.
Gary, do you think you would have made a good preacher?
I talk sometimes loud and long on the football field, but I don't really know. But I don't know.
Caden Buckles, he was the championship game MVP, a guy that was not eligible up until the playoffs a year ago. Just talk about the season that the Catholic transfer had for you.
We had a great season. He's been great from the day he walked on our campus, and he would have been great on any campus that he walked on. He's an outstanding young man from a great family. You know, got caught in a situation that he wasn't getting to play. And, you know, I've got mixed feelings about that, Jimmy. These kids that are transferring now, and it seems like there's more in high school, and it's becoming sort of a commonplace thing. And, you know, I used to really, really be against it. I guess I've changed a little bit. We've benefited from it, and we've also lost some from it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're a second or third team quarterback at some school, it's not a good position to be in sometimes. So, you know, we tell all our quarterbacks at the first of the year, and I tell them myself in a meeting, whether we've got three or four, that you better find your place to play on defense, because only one of you is going to be out on the field most of the time. And we tried to get our kids to play on some position besides quarterback. He didn't, and we have some that don't. But, you know, when you're the only dude, you know, we can put four wideouts out there, and we can put four defensive backs out there, but you can only put one quarter out there at a time. So it makes it tough on kids that are pretty good players that get stuck behind people at different schools. And I understand that. I understand that to a certain degree.
Alcoa has won seven consecutive state titles. You said there's undue pressure on the next class of seniors because of that. Is that good pressure or bad pressure?
Well, I don't know if it's fair pressure. We certainly don't do that from ourselves, because sooner or later that's going to end, and it's surely not going to be a group of seniors' fault. But they do talk about that from time to time. They don't want to be the group that lets the school down, the community down. And I know that's talked about amongst the seniors. We certainly don't put that pressure on them as coaches, but we put a lot of stock in our seniors and in the senior leadership, and we tell them that's the most important thing you can do at Alcoa High School is to be a good senior leader, not to be All-State, not to be a college prospect. The biggest thing you got at our school is to be a good leader when your senior year rolls around, no matter what role you play on our football team. And we get tremendous senior leadership out of mm-hmm. our guys.
Is that how you diffuse the pressure, is to just say, hey, be a good senior leader? That's all I want.
I do, and you know, pressure and nerves, I feel like you get a lot more of that when you're not prepared, and we're usually prepared when we go into ball games, and, you know, I don't see a lot of pressure from any direction, from any coaches, from any kids. You know, I just want to make sure we're well prepared and go in, and that's the way it goes.
Coach, and if they do the right things, then some of that college interest will come. What can you say about some of your guys that have really been recognized and you know are talents that are drawing interest on the college level? Who are some of those guys in those schools?
Well, we talk about that some, and there's so much social media out there now, and these recruiting services, and I got mixed feelings on some of those. But we certainly tell them it all starts in the classroom. And we've got kids that we had kids for last year. We had a very, very talented football team last year and had some players on that team that could certainly have played college ball, but couldn't get everything in the right order to make that move. So, you know, we try to do everything we can grade-wise and keep them on that path. You know, that's not our sole reason for having them out there, but, you know, it's part of it if we can get them a free education sometime. And that's what I tell them, and I tell them the truth. It becomes a little business-like. When you leave high school, it becomes a little business-like, and it's not the fun that it is all the time sometimes. So to me, and my son was benefited from that. He got a full scholarship, and it sure saved us a lot of money.
There have been some that, because of how dominant you've been in Class 3A, some are suggesting that it's time for Alcoa to move up in classification. What's your response to that?
Well, we won't. We will when the numbers tell us to. I don't know if Maryville's going to move up or if is Oakland going to move up. They've won three in a row, whatever. You know, I think people's just got to try to match us. We got advantages. I'll admit that. I don't guess there's a 3A school in the state that has 12 coaches, six on offense, six on defense, and we've got great facilities. We got great support. I've had coaches that have I've kept around for 8 or 9, 10, 11 years. So we have some advantages. They're not unfair advantages that I know of. We follow every USAA we're supposed to. And, you know, I'm not going to apologize to anybody for being good. But we won't move up. We'll move up when our numbers tell us to move up. But I think maybe if the people who are saying that maybe look at the TOSAA a little bit, I'll be the first one to say we have too many classifications in the state of Tennessee. We got nine champions. You're talking about in the private league, there's 11 or 12, 13 schools in each division. So, you know, personally, I think they need to cut the classifications down to 5 and 2 or even maybe 4 and 2. I don't know. But I don't know. Some of those are haters. And some of those are coming from different directions. But in that first quarter of the night when they were slapping us around, I don't know if many people – I certainly wasn't saying that. But, you know, it's a depth problem, too. You know, we played Maryville. We played West. We played two of the best, and we played Ray County at one time. All three of those schools were in the top five in their division. We picked up Cookeville, who was a 6A. We're trying to play as many good people as we can outside of our schedule. But for us to just say, hey, we're going to move up so we can beat our chest or something, I don't know if that's fair to our kids.
I guess, Gary Rankin, our co-head coach, 466 wins, 17 state championships, 13 at Alcoa. Gary, do you think you're as motivated now as you've ever been?
I think so. I'm still hungry, Jimmy. I enjoy it. I don't think it's any different than y'all's job or selling real estate. I mean, you hit that million-dollar club in real estate, you just don't quit. You know, so I still enjoy it. I enjoy being around the kids. I'm still competitive. You know, I hope I can do it a few more years if the Lord's willing, but I'm certainly not out of gas right now. I think most of my coaches and most of our players will tell you that I'm still fairly active, and some of them say overactive during practices. So I've been very blessed with my health and being in shape and being able to do this. And there's no doubt it's a little bit easier when you're winning and you don't get beat down all the time, but I hope that I can do it 3 or 4 more years and enjoy it like I'm enjoying it.
Hey, Gary, congratulations again on another state championship, another great job by you, your staff, and your players. Thank you so much for joining us. And next year on the Monday after the state championships, I look forward to visiting with you again.
Exactly what I started to say. I hope I'll talk to y'all again next year this time.
Hey, thanks,
y'all. Appreciate it. Enjoy your show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Coach. That's Alcoa's head coach, Gary Rankin, another state title, 17 for him, 13 while at Alcoa. Let's go right back to the phones where Steve is our next caller. Hello, Steve.
Hey, Jim. I had a question for you. First, I want to just congratulate Coach Rankin. I don't know what's in the water over there in Blount County, but it needs to be passed around over here in Knox County. But anyway, you've mentioned in the Lady Vols win yesterday that Virginia Tech Lady Hokies had won how many in a row at home?
63 in a row non-conference games. That was according to the UT release.
Okay, that's 53 in a row.
63.
Non-conference games.
Yeah, 63.
Correct. All right. That's what I was needing to know, and I appreciate it. And thank you all for what you do.
Thank you. That's not bad. This is a very resilient team. Vince, are doing it without Ray Burrell.
Yeah.
Arguably their best player returning.
And that to me is what makes this even more impressive is that they're doing it without Ray Burrell, who largely at times carried this team through some tough patches. She was the one that to put them on their shoulders. Charlie Cream, who does the Joe Lenardi bracket for the women's side, he tweeted this weekend that what Tennessee is doing undefeated without Ray Burrell this year probably makes Kelly Harper the leader for national coach of the year right now. That's how impressed people are around the country of what Kelly Harper is doing with this team undefeated without their best player in Ray Burrell.
They rallied from 7 down to beat Virginia Tech. They rallied from 11 down to beat Texas, I think it was, in the fourth quarter.
Mm-hmm.
This is a pretty darn resilient team, and when they have to stop somebody or make a basket or block a shot or whatever, they've done it. Pretty impressive. So,
and the fact that there's different people that are stepping up at different times, whether it's Tamari Key or Jordan Horston or Jordan Walker, Alexis Stott, they're just getting a lot of contributions and at the right time as well. So very impressive.
Yep. All right. When we come back, we'll be joined by Rob Lewis of AllQuest.com. We'll get his take on Tennessee basketball, football bowl game, football recruiting, you name it. We'll talk to Rob Lewis about that. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes, Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.